I just beat you barely, but. So did I, yeah. Saw some, it was nice. It was foggy, but nice. Anyway, first item is just call the roll. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Cindy Deacon Williams.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brendan McComb.
Here.
Mike Rose.
Here.
I'm Tom Imison. I'm here, so we have a quorum. And in fact, all board meetings are here today. As a reminder, this meeting will be live streamed all day, so be helpful to have people silence your electronic devices for the duration of the meeting. The board will meet in closed executive session starting at 4:15. The purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join. We will adjourn the meeting directly after the executive session is done. We'll now move to the state forester we'll do the consent items first. Is there a motion to move ahead with the consent items?
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion carries. Those items are approved. And we'll now move to the state forester for his comments.
Thanks, Tom. Good morning, everybody. I'm pleased to welcome three new board members to their first regular board meeting. I thank them for their willingness to step up and serve Oregonians on this policy board. All three members did participate in the Board of Forestry October retreat, which I thought was very productive with great discussion. And they did that even though there was relatively short notice for the new board members. Moving on, we officially declared the end of fire season statewide. The last day of fire season was October 29th in the Southwest District. Although we just did have a 600-acre fire in the Dalles that we finished mopping up yesterday. So fire season's over doesn't mean that fires stop. And while I'm thankful that fire season's officially over, I'm also very proud of how ODF employees responded yet again to another very challenging fire season. I'm continually impressed in the face of adversity how the entire agency, landowners, cooperators, and partners respond to the very real growing complexity and duration of fire seasons. My sincere thanks to all of them. Over the course of the 2018 fire season, ODF and its Forest Protective Association partners suppressed a total of 1,059 fires, an estimated 75,500 acres burned on ODF-protected land this year, more than doubling the 10-year average. Again, the 2018, as I've talked about throughout the season, it has been extremely challenging, making it the 6 out of the last 7 years of extreme fire conditions. We exceeded the 10-year averages in number of fires, acres burned, and cost. And once again, we experienced the same challenges identified in the 2016 Secretary of State performance audit. On large fires, we were challenged to find sufficient mid-level management, and we're not able to fully support a second incident management team without extending employees beyond our 14-day rest policy. We mobilized an out-of-state Florida incident management team to fill gaps in our IMT rosters and to actually take over one of our large fires. We've continued to see impacts to meeting other agency works, including delaying the smoke management rule revisions, which is necessary to mitigate the increasing risk of fire. Additionally, smoke from wildfires impacted many Oregonians and their communities for a large portion of the summer, and many Oregonians were evacuated from their homes due to fires burning into and around their communities. These trends continue to be a significant concern, and the department's continuing to look for opportunities to change these alarming trajectories. up through the policy option package submitted in our agency request budget. Despite these challenges, we've seen many successes. As usual, our districts, our base fire protection has been highly effective at initial attack, keeping the vast majority, 95% of all fires at 10 acres or less. I want to recognize ODF employees statewide who have consistently answered the challenge in protecting our resources, communities, and Oregonians from wildfire. Doug Graff, Chief of Fire Protection, will provide more detail in a final fire season update a little later this morning. And speaking of dedication, I also want to recognize that we currently have ODF employees deployed in Florida right now. So in coordination with the Oregon State Fire Marshals to support the Hurricane Michael recovery effort, together we've now deployed 4 8-person incident management teams to help Florida in their time of need as they did this summer in our wildfire season. So different kind of wildfire, but same support. So moving on to sort of Board of Forestry topics and the other divisions, the State Forest Division is bringing two big items to you over the next couple days, dealing with a forest management plan revision as well as the conclusion of phase one of exploring a habitat conservation plan, or HCP. This work is critical for positioning the department for success in providing long-term sustainable benefits to Oregonians. Your decisions on these two topics represent important milestones for the projects that will enable them to remain on course. As part of their standard process for county and stakeholder outreach, the division presented the materials to the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee in advance of the Board of Forestry meeting. The division also hosted an informational meeting for the public as an opportunity for question and answers directly with staff on both the FMP and HCP materials. In addition, staff reached out to stakeholders throughout the development of the material. These two projects are singular components of a three-prong approach to improve financial viability and conservation outcomes. I'll remind you, the other two prongs include business improvements and seeking other sources of revenue, which we've talked about before, particularly the restructuring of the state forest organization. Progress has been made on both of these, and the work supports our goal to improve financial viability and conservation outcomes. This work has continued across another intense and complex fire season in which a large portion of the state forest workforce was assigned to fires throughout the season, as is the case with all agency divisions and programs. The division was able to keep these two planning projects on track while also conducting core business to manage the forest, provide Oregonians with recreational activities, and provide educational interpretation programs at the Tillamook Forest Center. To give you the sense of the public service they provided in addition to fire protection, it's a big recreation year with over 40,000 campers. We also had 54,000 visitors at the Tillamook Forest Centers, and over 6,000 children participated in educational programs. Additionally, I'd like to thank Liz, Brian, and the State Forest staff for also continuing and completing the WALT project, which is our new computerized log tracking system, while balancing and supporting the needs of a challenging fire season. This project represents years of excellent work improving our business practices. The Private Forest Division's responsibility is to ensure that privately owned forests are managed responsibly under the Forest Practice Act, and this continued this summer despite the fire season. Stewardship foresters and division staffs strive to continue to provide technical assistance to landowners, detect and respond to forest health threats, and continue with key monitoring and policy work during the fire season. While some core business did suffer a slowdown due to the strain of contributing to the fire militia, the division was able to stay focused and complete the work on the Marble Murlett technical report and expert review, which you'll receive an update on tomorrow. I'd like to offer a shout out to Lena, Kyle, Jennifer, and their staff for their focus on this key work while being pulled by fire season. Finally, I'd like to recognize the Agency Administration Division. it doesn't, you wouldn't think this, but they face the largest percentage drawdown during fire season because of their relatively small staff and the key roles they play in supporting IT, fire, finance, and safety during fire season. They stayed focused and submitted the agency request budget on time and in great shape. And special thanks to Bill and Jonathan and their staff for their focus on this key work while keeping all the other trains running on time. So very good. Moving to, away from fire season and a more positive highlight, I'm going to take a moment to highlight this year's recipient of the Oregon's Tree Farmer of the Year Award. The Outstanding Tree Farmer of the Year is a state national effort sponsored by the American Forest Foundation's American Tree Farm System to honor family forest landowners who are doing an exceptional job in managing the forest. First, I'd like to congratulate all the nominees that were nominated this year as Tree Farmers of the Year. But this year's honor goes to Marcia Carr and her family tree farm in Benton County. The Oaks own approximately 800 acres of land, with the homestead parcel being purchased in 1883 and cared for by family generations ever since. Their forests are currently being cared by four generations. When Marcia Carr, daughter of Don and Donna Oaks, took leadership role for the Oaks Investment LLC, she worked with her dad to learn about forestry and eventually took the Master Woodlands program at OSU. She did plot studies, marked trees for thinning and recovery after storm damage, and she recently laid out a major road project. Marcia was an active member of the Benton County Small Woodlands Association. Marcia used her years of learned forestry knowledge to continue to meet their goals in a sustainable and progressive path. Goals that included timber harvest income, providing wildlife habitat, having family gathering spots, and sharing knowledge broadly with those around them. Their forests are certified by American Tree Farm System as meeting the standards of sustainability. Their management plan goals and action plans are defined in their management plan, which was firsthand written by Don years ago. Marcia took on the current version of this plan last year, and her brother Daryl Oaks stated, "This plan is an educational tool for the next generation. They can look at what we are thinking to guide them in managing the property." Marcia Carr passed away this summer, but her dedication to sustainable forest management will be a legacy that resonates for years to come on the Oaks family farm. So, in closing, while many challenges existed this fire season, a significant body of work, as you can see, continued within the agency. One item that's not on the agenda for this board meeting that I want to highlight is a federal forest restoration program, which continues to gain positive traction with our first sold timber sale using Good Neighbor Authority in Klamath Lake occurring over the summer. And more opportunities continue to emerge in this program, and we're looking forward to other projects, timber sales coming online soon. We currently have over $4 million in supplemental projects with the Forest Service on all national forests in the state of Oregon. So great progress is being made there. This is one of the key longer-term components of managing the ever-increasing risk of wildfire, and so it's nice to see the progress being made. I'll leave you with this. Another busy fire stretched the entire agency, yet our commitment to safety of our employees, service to landowners, and Oregonians remain acutely focused and the highest priorities. I can't say enough for all of our employees who helped and supported this effort. We look forward to continued discussion over the next 2 days on the key policy topics and also continued discussions about how we can assure to continue to manage all of our business in the face of increasing challenging fire seasons. And with that, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Questions for Peter or comments from board members? Great. Before taking public comment, just a couple of comments about public comment. So in order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, including today, public comment for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes. And there's a sign-up sheet, as I think everybody knows, available for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. For the state forest forest management plan topic specifically, we have scheduled two 15-minute blocks of invited testimony from the two stakeholder groups who have regularly participated in that topic. To ensure, though, that the general public has a fair opportunity to speak, we will also have public comment sign up available for that. Yes. I thought I just did. Or comments. So, yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, go right ahead.
So, number one, I wanted to sort of build on a little bit of what Peter said in terms of the impact of the fire season and the attention that it's being given by the general public, and note for the rest of the board that at least down in Southwest, the Medford Mail Tribune has decided that this is the issue, and they have a running banner on the top above the fold on the front page that is counting down the number of days to the start of next fire season. And that is in the paper every day. And there is either an article or a op-ed piece at least once a week regarding fire and smoke in the paper. It is a very huge deal. We have had enough bad fire years in a row now that it has sort of captured the attention and the imagination. So it is impossible to underestimate the moment that we're in terms of the attention that we are being given from the public and from the press. And I think it's really important that we understand that and step up to the challenge that, frankly, has been laid down. Secondly, I'd like to make just a couple of general observations on one of my favorite hobby horse topics or soapbox topics, and that's climate change and the need for us to recognize that it is occurring, that the impacts are here, and that it extends beyond changes to our fire season. That we need to understand not only how we accommodate those changes within the realm of fire, but also within the broader realm of management of the forest resources of the state. I'd like to share with you just a couple of, we've all seen the technical reports, we've heard the scientific reports. Sometimes it becomes a little bit more real when you get some personal anecdotal information. And I want to share with you just a couple of things. One, I was talking to my son the other day, who lives up in Anchorage, Alaska. They didn't have their first freeze in Anchorage, Alaska until the last weekend in October. That was a month later than the average, and it was 2 weeks later than any date that has ever been historically recorded. Now, as we all know, when you get up to the north, the impacts of climate change are becoming even more intense and obvious than elsewhere. But that's pretty impressive to be a month later than average and 2 weeks later than ever before recorded. Was also talking to a friend in West Virginia who has owned some property for 20 years, sort of back in the hollows in West Virginia. Their hollow flooded three times this summer, and each individual flood was worse than any flood that had previously been experienced by them in the past 20 years. And then down in Medford, just as an anecdote from my own backyard, we've got a rain gauge station that we report daily on. And we only had measurable rainfall once between June 21st and September 30th. And on that one day, we had just over a tenth of an inch. What I think that brings home to me is that we're certainly, because of climate change all over the world, experiencing some extremes that we have not seen before. in our part of the world, the take-home message to me is we had better get ready for and understand that we're dealing with much longer, much hotter, much drier summers, that when storms are arriving, they tend to be more extreme than we have typically experienced in the past, and that when they do land, we often are dealing with some pretty major hydrologic events when it's a rainstorm and some pretty major lightning strikes when it's a dry storm. That's going to really change the platform upon which we're trying to manage forests. And we need to see some significant recognition of that and changes to our mindset of what it is that we're facing as we come up with management direction for forests in the state. Thanks.
We do have two people who have signed up to appear on items not on the agenda for today, Mary Skurlock and Jason Gonzalez. Welcome.
Morning. Chair Imeson, members of the board. My name is Mary Skurlock. I'm speaking for the Oregon Stream Protection Coalition, an ad hoc 26-member statewide partnership of conservation and fishing industry groups. Given that the board is welcoming today three new board members to their first regular meeting, I just want to take this opportunity to briefly introduce my coalition and its priorities for 2019. OSPC formed about 6 years ago during this board's long, controversial, and sometimes highly technical rule development process that strengthened streamside logging to reduce harvest-induced warming of smaller salmon, steelhead, and bull trout streams, as prohibited by the anti-degradation criterion of Oregon Stream Temperature Standard. Although this process resulted in the first significant change to stream protection under the OFPA since 1994, we see our work as incomplete, given the majority of stream reaches that are still in need of additional protection. In broad strokes, our 2019 priorities are as follows. Number one, and generally, forest practices monitoring and adaptive policy change. We hope the board will continue to support a ramp up of the department's monitoring efforts. The central role of private forest practices in the federal disapproval of Oregon's non-point pollution plan for the coastal zone and numerous other analyses indicate the current regulatory baseline cannot safely be presumed sufficient. We believe the department concurs that resources are currently still insufficient to fully meet the agency's monitoring mandate. We think that this board can help make monitoring and adaptive policy change a higher priority. Secondly, set a course for rule change in the Siskiyou region. We strongly support a rule change in this region, and decisions that this board will make in the spring of next year will determine whether and how the project currently underway for this region will result in such change. Third, focus more attention on headwaters and the adequacy of current rule minimums to protect smaller streams, not just salmon, steelhead, and bull trout reaches, and unstable slopes. We join the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, and numerous other independent scientists and Oregonians in our position that aquatic ecosystems are being degraded by current practices along our smallest streams and on steep and unstable slopes prone to mass wasting. Reducing road impacts and restoring beaver will also be critical to improving watershed health and resilience to climate change. Number four, work closely with DEQ to identify measures needed to meet temperature and sediment load allocations under water quality restoration plans. This is an area the new board members will find is fraught with policy and legal disconnects between the agencies. We look forward to a closer working relationship for Clean Water Act implementation. Issues include affirmative validation of whether forest practices are actually adequate to meet water quality targets, not just a legal fiction that they are. And another issue is whether and how voluntary measures with regulatory backstops can be successfully employed for compliance. Fifth, and echoing member Williams' points made earlier, integrate best available science about climate change into all your decisions about management-related risks to public resources. And lastly, consider ESA assurances for aquatic species on non-federal forests. We hope that this board will decide tomorrow whether to move forward with the Habitat Conservation Plan for state forest lands, but we also hope you would consider the potential benefits of seeking, as Washington State has done, federal assurances for aquatic species under the ESA for the state's private forest regulatory program. Thanks a lot for letting me share this morning.
All right. This is a new one for me. I got it? All right. Chair Imason, members of the board, my name is Jason Gonzalez. I'm the Forest and Watershed Campaign Organizer for Oregon Wild. We are a statewide conservation nonprofit. I'm here today partially on behalf of our 20,000 statewide list of members and supporters. But I'm here today about something specific that is not on this agenda, and I want to make clear that I come to you from Walton, Oregon, where I live right in the middle of the Oregon Coast Range and right in the middle of Oregon's industrial forest lands, where I have the privilege to live and work on about 160 acres of working forest, where I'm privileged to join the landowner in supporting work to restore moderately healthy forests and do incredible work to restore tree farms and plantations around us that have been heavily damaged by logging in the past. Before I launch into the comments that brought me here today, I would just like to briefly thank and recognize Member Deacon Williams' statements on climate change and remind members of this board that just this year, Oregon State University confirmed the research, the long ongoing research of others, and documented that clear-cut logging is likely the number one source of climate-changing emissions in the state of Oregon and are severely in need of new regulations. Reports from OSU have highlighted that policies that fall under the jurisdiction of this board being changed are one of the most meaningful things that this state could do to impact our role in climate change. Further, I'd like to address there was a comment about the visible, noticeable impacts and the negative impacts of climate change being so visible in the north, and I'd like to state that I think they're incredibly visible in my neighborhood, where I've lived for 10 years watching salmon come into a stream every year that are not there this year, where I've drank for 10 years out of a surface stream that comes out of healthy forest behind my home. I'm about to run out of drinking water for the first time ever on this drinking water system, which has served multiple generations of families on this homestead. We are out of water. It is from climate change. It is also from logging practices in our forests. These things are clearly documented by OSU research. I am here today, though, on behalf of the members and supporters of our organization and community members that I work with on the Oregon coast. My campaign keeps me mostly working from communities along the Oregon coast and coast range, much like my own, ranging from Port Orford to Astoria, where I largely support existing community groups and their work to address concerns that they have in their areas about the impacts of industrial logging on their drinking water and forests near their homes. Recently, many members of those different community groups joined together in an organization that has dubbed itself Spray Free Coast, which is a coalition of organizations along the coast. I was made aware of a letter that organization submitted to members of this board and Oregon State Forester just a few weeks ago, and I'm unhappy to join you today in order to report the response that we received from the State Forester recently. I checked in with that organization of coastal groups just the other day, knowing that I was going to be at this meeting and seeing if any of them were able to be here to address this board about the responses they've received to that letter. None of them were able to join us here today, and I want to make clear that I am not officially representing this organization, but would like to communicate concerns that I have as an organizer who appreciates the ability to engage this board that is considered to be the most open-minded and least financially tied to industry board that we've had in this serving in this capacity. I believe that the Spray Free Coast Coalition brought a number of incredibly reasonable concerns to this board and the State Forester, as well as the elected officials that have showed interest in this issue, in requesting that the ferns notification system that has been promised to them is not working in the way that they would expect. They asked for simple, approachable, technical fixes, for the most part, that experts have told us are very doable. Things like separating out ground backpack sprays from aerial sprays, which is already filed in the paperwork that is given to the Department of Forestry. Things like separating out countywide roadside sprays and complex roadside spray systems that do not concern people who are concerned about monitoring aerial spraying in the streams behind their homes. I found it very disappointing that this coalition of coastal rural Oregonians, who are more impacted than most of us in this room by industrial logging practices, came to this board asking for reasonable changes to help them engage you in conversation looking for solutions, and were met by State Forester Peter Doherty's response claiming that legislative policy fixes were needed to address those things. I don't think that is an accurate way to represent the needs that we have in order to address these technical fixes in the fern system that would give our communities the ability to monitor what is going on in their backyards. I think it is reasonable for our coastal Oregonians who live below thousands of acres of clear cuts and damaged streams to want to know when a helicopter might be spraying chemicals behind their house. I don't think that it takes a legislative fix or major funding in order to change the way the algorithm in ferns works to let them separate those out and actually be able to monitor what's going on. I don't want to get into further detail. Members of the board have received this letter. If you have not, your staff promised us you would, and I hope that you will. And if not, we know for sure that State Forest Road already has it, as we've received a response. I would also like to point out to you that the coalition did receive favorable responses from elected officials, stating that they felt that the demands that were made, the requests that were made in that letter, were very reasonable and approachable, and in most situations did not need a legislative fix. That is from the legislature. I would hope that the easier things that we've asked for in these letters would be found approachable by this board and addressed in a way that does not require big political fights that come in and micromanage the work of this board. I hope that going forward, when citizens come to engage this board about their concerns in the community, that they're met with thoughtfulness and compassion, and that we can look for ways to work together rather than community members feeling like they have to micromanage the work of this board and involve the legislature in every little thing that we think that we could fix together. Thank you.
Thank you.